You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, April 12th, 2018.
Can't go anywhere within the construction zone and even outside of the main line where there isn't construction activity going on. And that's just because we're racing to get to that August deadline.
Monroe County and the city of Bloomington are tackling construction projects throughout the city, while the Indiana Department of Transportation is pursuing an aggressive schedule in its construction of Interstate 69. In today's feature report, we'll hear an update from NDOT spokesman Andrew Dietrich, who says most traffic delays caused by construction should be eased by Memorial Day. That's coming up on today's WFHB feature report.
The annual Little 500 bicycle race is coming up next weekend. Our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks residents how they feel about the race. That's coming up later in the program. But first, your daily headlines.
Last night, the Bloomington City Council held a special session to commemorate the city's bicentennial. Opening the session, Councilmember Steve Volan noted the city's recorded history is incomplete in both continuity and equity, end quote.
We gain a second sight from hindsight, a sixth sense. We see the huge blind spots our predecessors had. There is no clear record of African Americans present at the founding of the city, and of women, almost none. We know there were already settlers, mostly of European descent, in close quarters in this area. Those men formed a government because only men of a certain color at that time could vote or hold office. And before that, there were the original inhabitants, the only true native people of this land, who were either fought against, negotiated with, or forced out of this place. Those who recorded the events of that time did not think to acknowledge everyone for reasons that you all know. I want to take the opportunity of this day to acknowledge all those who came before us, not just those who were officially recorded.
Volan went on to give a short recap of Bloomington's history.
The first referendum on making Bloomington an incorporated town was held March 5, 1827. 18 people voted for it, 3 people voted against. We know that there were at least 500 people in town at the time, so it's safe to say that even then, voter turnout was low.
In his remarks, Mayor John Hamilton emphasized Bloomington's efforts to build a welcoming city with a generous spirit.
We are a city of people with heart and vision that embrace eclecticism, diversity, and recognize that embracing change and inclusion are fundamental ingredients of our success.
During the special session's public comment period, Black Lives Matter advocate Vox Booker announced his group will continue to protest the mayor's decision to approve purchasing an armored truck for the police department. He said the group and its allies would continue protesting until they feel they've been heard.
We still have issues that need to be dealt with. My group has made a commitment to interrupt every session of City Council until the mayor's administration deals with this military assault vehicle the way that we would have liked for it to initially be done. I'm sorry for those of you who will be upset by that, but this is how the democratic process does work. It's a back and forth.
True to his word, Booker began a protest a short time later, and the special session was promptly adjourned. The council later reconvened its regular scheduled committee of the whole meeting. Booker again attempted to disrupt the council. Acting Council Chair Dave Rollo asked Booker to wait until public comment so council member could discuss their sole agenda item.
Mr. Booker? Mr. Booker, you're out of order.
My question is for Ms. Guthrie.
Mr. Booker, you're out of order. Would you please wait until public comment?
Council members were unable to continue conducting business, and Rollo recessed the meeting. asking the sergeant-at-arms to escort Booker out. Members of the audience chanted, quote, "Let him speak," end quote. But Booker was escorted out of the city council chambers by a police officer.
The city council reconvened after the recess without interruption. The council reviewed and voiced unanimous approval for a purchase agreement for the IU hospital site on 2nd Street. The city's corporate counsel, Philip Guthrie, said the city has already signed a letter of intent to buy the 24-acre site from IU Health for $6.5 million.
Now, I'm not saying that we will redevelop it ourselves, but it is in our TIF district, and it's a prime piece of property where it offers a chance for the community to come together and look at what might really be a wonderful use of property right in the heart of our community.
The site consists of 5 parcels, collectively bordered by 2nd Street, Wiley Street, and the Beeline Trail. Guthrie said IU Health is expected to vacate the property by 2021. The city does not yet have specific redevelopment plans for the site. Guthrie said the parcels could be sold to individuals, bringing the property back onto the tax rolls, since IU Health has not been required to pay tax on it. Controller Jeff Underwood commented on the potential sale of parcels, which are currently zoned for medical uses.
One of the stipulations in the agreement, it cannot be sold to a direct competitor of the hospital. And so there's a lot of public input that will have to come forward and possibly rezoned. And at that time, then, you typically go for the highest and best use for the property, but there's going to be a lot of public input and a lot of discussion about what is the best uses for these parcels. And each one may be different, and you could see that any of the parcels get subdivided even further.
Quoting the city's purchase agreement, Guthrie confirmed the property could not be sold to a competing hospital system or healthcare provider. This prompted as council member Steve Volan to ask Guthrie if the stipulation would impact the nearby Volunteers in Medicine clinic.
If the city wanted to see some kind of an expansion of the VIM clinic or some maintenance of some modest outpatient hospital services under the aegis of VIM, would IU Health Bloomington Hospital object to the city partnering with VIM to expand its footprint and or services if it was running the show? VIM was. Is that precluded by the contract?
I will ask them.
Thank you.
Council members expressed varying views on how the property should be redeveloped. Council member Volan said it's important to maintain a health care facility for area neighborhoods. Council member Allison Chopra said she favored a senior center and reasonably priced housing stock.
I would like to see some lower middle class homes, some homes that are not affordable housing by the definition that we use, but housing where people who are younger in this community can purchase a home, can enter the home ownership, because it is incredibly, incredibly difficult right now for people to gain an asset that is so important to people my age and my parents, you know, that's helping them retire.
Councilmember Andy Ruff pointed out the fact that the sale of the parcels could turn a tidy profit for the city.
I would prefer that we think of it, and I would recommend that we think of it not so much as the city making any profit, but seeing it as an opportunity, or talking about it as an opportunity for the city to reclaim decades of foregone tax revenues.
Urban planners from the nationally renowned Urban Land Institute have been interviewing area stakeholders about the site's potential uses in the future. The Urban Land Institute was contracted to review potential development ideas for the hospital's 24-acre site for $135,000. The Institute will present its recommendations to the city tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.
Indiana's Attorney General Curtis Hill published an opinion piece this morning in support of a citizenship question on the next U.S. Census. The addition of the question, "Are you a U.S. citizen?" to the census has garnered national criticism and a lawsuit by states against the federal government. Hill's opinion editorial piece this morning condemns the lawsuit brought by 17 states and the District of Columbia. Hill writes, "To be a better country of immigrants," he, quote, "fully supports the federal government's constitutional authority to establish and enforce immigration policy," end quote. Last week, 17 states, 7 cities, and the U.S. Conference of Mayors sued the U.S. Census Bureau and Commerce Department to try to block the citizenship question from being put on the 2020 census questionnaire. The state of New York is the lead plaintiff in the case. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman has stated that the question could deter some from participating in the 2020 census, which he says would detrimentally impact states with large immigrant communities. Hill, however, stated the federal government has the right to ask census respondents whether they are citizens and stated the lawsuit against the Census Bureau and Commerce Department is tantamount to ignoring existing immigration law.
On Friday, Hill also fired an amicus brief supporting an Alabama voter ID law. Hill is leading an 11-member coalition of mostly Republican states who signed on to the Friends of the Court document. The state of Alabama enacted a voter ID law, requiring those who wish to vote to show state-issued identification before doing so. A U.S. district court upheld Alabama's law as a constitutional safeguard against fraud, but the decision is now being challenged in the 11th Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. Opponents of voter ID laws argue that the laws disproportionately affect minorities and socioeconomically disenfranchised populations. In 2008, the Supreme Court found Indiana's own voter ID law to be constitutionally sound. That decision, Crawford v. Marion County Election Board, approved the state law requiring a photo ID to vote, but found that voters without a voter ID could still submit provisional ballots. Indiana's voting registration for May 8th primary closed on Monday. Early and absentee voting for the primary is currently being accepted until May 7th.
Sexually transmitted diseases are on the rise in Indiana. Studies from the Centers for Disease Control show that in Indiana, chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis are of particular concern. Preliminary data for 2017 suggests an 11% increase in chlamydia rates, a 25% increase in gonorrhea rates, and a 1% increase in total syphilis cases. According to the CDC, nearly 20 million new cases of STDs occur in the United States every year, with approximately half of them being among young people. The Indiana State Department of Health is encouraging Hoosiers to get tested and learn the means of prevention for sexually transmitted diseases. The Department of Health says that many STDs have no symptoms, requiring an individual to get tested before any diseases can be identified. State Health Commissioner Chris Box urges anyone who is sexually active to get tested annually, saying that, quote, most STDs can be treated, but the best protection is prevention, end quote. The Indiana State Department of Health list of STD prevention methods includes abstinence and mutual monogamy, along with reducing the number of sexual partners, latex condoms, and vaccinations.
The city of Bloomington is looking to measure the impact of last winter's deer cull at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve. To do that, the Board of Park Commissioners approved a $5,000 contract with Ecologic LLC to measure the height of plants at the preserve. Speaking in the board's April 10th meeting, Natural Resources Manager Steve Cotter explained what the professional botanists will do.
And basically they'll look at the presence or absence and the heights of vegetation in 12 research plots scattered throughout the preserve to help determine whether the deer cull is working.
Cotter said the data will not only help measure the impact of the most recent cull, but will also inform any future management plans.
I would like to say that we may not see immediate effects of the deer cull with the deer browse pressure that the preserve has experienced for several decades. We don't know when the plants are going to respond, but I've been warned that it may take more than a year or two to see improvement in those heights.
In related news, Natural Resources Coordinator Elizabeth Tompkins said the city is currently developing a trail loop around the lake. Tompkins briefly discussed the project with Parks Commissioner Joe Hoffman.
Is this intended to be like a completely natural trail? Is it going to be an accessible? What are some of the thoughts about what kind of trail this
might be? That is definitely a part of our discussion. We're in the very beginning phases
of it. Okay, so not to be decided.
To be decided. We wanted to begin this discussion during the bicentennial, where our focus is trees and trails, and get people excited. We have some other projects in the works around the property, so those will be discussed as well and kind of included in this.
Residents can give the city their input on the trail development by contacting Tompkins at 812-349-3759. The Parks Commissioners also renewed a partnership agreement with Centerstone. The behavioral health organization first partnered with the city last year to provide personnel to clean four city parks. Centerstone's Director of Administration, Greg May, elaborated on the program, which runs from May through December.
I just wanted to share some quick stats about how the program went. We had 46 applicants. We collected applications for about 2 weeks through one of our outreach centers. We employed a staff of 7 for the contract period, and that was 7 days a week throughout the time that we had the agreement. As Dave said, provided a Centerstone supervisor to transport the people to and from parks and then provide on-site supervision. Above and beyond that, you know, these were folks who were homeless, living in shelters, you know, kind of street homeless, may have been, you know, panhandling in the downtown area. So we really, you know, made this a low barrier employment opportunity for them. We conducted background checks, but they were, you know, pretty basic because of the level of supervision that we were providing. We were comfortable doing that. The Centerstone staff also provided a lot of case management services to get these folks connected to other services. We also, you know, sort of unintentionally did outreach during some of the cleanup because, you know, people would approach us, ask about Centerstone services, inpatient rehab services, those kinds of things. We also spent a fair amount of time, you know, helping people gather documents to be eligible for employment, obtaining bank accounts, and then helping with money management skills as well.
The partnership is a part of the city's Downtown Safety and Civility Initiative. Referring to the initiative, May said his organization is delighted to be a part of the solution. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandewiel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Neoff. Slotograph Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or online at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
Construction throughout Bloomington is causing headaches for residents. In today's feature report, we'll hear an update on Interstate 69 construction from Indiana Department of Transportation spokesman Andrew Dietrich, who says the state is rushing to complete the Section 5 project through Bloomington before its August deadline.
Obviously, we have a pretty tight time frame. If we're going to hit August of this year to be to substantial completion, and we knew that going in when the state picked up the project last August, that doing a lot of work in 1 year's time was a very aggressive schedule, and we hope that the our customers and motorists around understand that there's a lot of work to be done. There will be some points where things will start opening up before we get to the conclusion, but they just need to hang with us and be as patient as possible while we get through, you know, the majority of the construction as we approach August. I think the biggest change for most, I think most people anticipated it, was the traffic shift that we made in early March in the northern part of the construction zone from about Bryant's Creek up to the Liberty Church interchange, where we took all the northbound traffic and moved it over to the new southbound lanes, kept everyone in a single lane configuration with a middle turn lane. And that seems to be working out pretty well. It allows the crews to get in and really get to work on the northbound lanes and reconstruct shoulders and do the patching and eventually get into the paving they need to do so we can get those northbound lanes open before we get to that August time frame. If we get down to the southern end of the construction zone, I think the key phrase there is bridge work and trying to get east-west mobility back to where it needs to be. We've heard from a lot of drivers and motorists about the delays and the congestion at both 2nd and 3rd Street. A lot of that's going to be alleviated hopefully around Memorial Day, around that time. The bridge work that's being done is in a couple of different phases where we'll start and do the work on the north side and then shift traffic over to the same configuration on the south side and then do some median work. So people will see traffic patterns shifting on each of those bridges, but it is to accommodate different things. And when traffic is shifted one way, and that one lane is open, I think it's the right lane eastbound right now. We've had a couple of questions from folks saying, you know, what's going on? I don't see any work happening in that lane. Well, the reality is the work is happening down below, and it's the completion of the retaining walls and a lot of utility work that goes along there. And we need to keep that lane clear as a protection for the workers who are down at ground level below the bridge doing the work. So the 2nd and 3rd Street bridges will continue in various configurations until about Memorial Day, and then things should lighten up there. There are going to be restrictions on the main line, State Road 37, off and on throughout the summer, depending on where the work is going on. Obviously, at Sample Road, where we're putting in the overchange or the overpass there, that work needs to be, the workers need to be separated from traffic. So we're always going to be taking some lanes there. The Walnut Street interchange is something that needs to be brought up to interstate standards. It's not a lot of work, actually. It's about a month's work. So, you know, mid to late April, we should have that open again. That's really just widening some shoulders, doing some drainage work and repaving to make sure that that ties in well with the interstate that's going to be there. The Liberty Church interchange up on the northern end, work continues there, and along with the access roads from that interchange to those customers who are on either side of State Road 37, as we continue to close off access, because this is a limited access highway, at places like Turkey Tracks to the east and Pine Boulevard to the east. Eventually, once those access roads are open on the west side, we'll begin making those closures on the west side as well. And those will be, we'll give folks plenty of notice when those things are going to happen. So you really can't go anywhere within the construction zone and even outside of the main line where there isn't construction activity going on. And that's just because we're racing to get to that August deadline.
That was WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with Andrew Dietrich on the Interstate 69 construction project. Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
With the Little 500 and America's largest college weekend almost upon us, Voices in the Street went out into the community and asked your friends and neighbors what they think about the Little Five.
I like to see the pride and the celebration and the fun.
I think that it's an amazing tradition at IU.
A really enthusiastic energy on campus. You can like hear the bass pumping from like blocks away. That's fun. And everyone seems really excited.
No, we go out on Little Five. Yeah, as much as possible, for sure.
I go to the race every year. My fraternity won it my freshman year, so that was a blast. That's what I do. We celebrate after.
I am going to the race because we have a team, so we have to go support.
Well, definitely going out because senior year, Little Five.
I'll be working in a kitchen, hating my life, probably.
Probably working.
Probably working a whole lot, yeah.
I just joined a sorority, so now I go to the race. I didn't last year.
No, we've never been to the races. We're more into the culture of it.
So I feel like tickets are expensive.
Usually go to house parties or the bars are pretty fun, but I don't go to the races.
Fun like the weeks before and after leading up to Little Five as opposed to actual Little Five week, just because of the way my schedule usually works out. Right. People like to assign stuff during Little Five, which is not good.
No, I kind of forget that there are races.
I've never been to the race. I've never had the opportunity, but I really like how it brings the campus together.
From my experience, it's basically just drinking, honestly, to celebrate, but I know that the bike race is super important to people and helps with scholarships, so that's awesome.
It's a good week to hang out before the end of the year, and it gets all depressing and we all have to leave, so it's like a nice time to say goodbye to everyone and party one last time, I guess.
I know Playboy Cardi's gonna be here. That's gonna be fun.
But as far as it goes, yeah, I basically just drink a lot.
Not a big partying guy myself. I plan to be out of town that whole weekend.
Pops are scary.
everyone gets arrested. I don't really participate a lot.
No plans. No, we've never attended. We're not into like the fraternity sorority scene.
I don't go out of my way to steer clear. In fact, I'll probably be down in Kirkwood.
But everyone's having fun, and if everyone's responsible, it's great. I think that a lot of locals kind of resent it. I know a lot of people that grew up here that just complain about all the people in town and they're going to leave town.
I just think it's really disruptive. I'm a graduate student and I teach W170, and that whole week, which is one of the more important weeks in terms of class content, students aren't showing up, or if they do, they're you know, out of it for various reasons. They've been partying or some things. Yeah, it can be kind of a drag in terms of students falling through on assignments and showing up to class.
I'd say when you're out of the college life, you know, when you're actually like an adult, a working adult, it's a little bit of an inconvenience, but you know, it's a college town, so.
It's a university thing. I don't pay any attention to it. I take over my part of the town. There's a IU part of the town, there's a non-IU part of the town. And I don't pay any attention to it. I do. I would like to see if my old fraternity did well in it, but that's check the standings when it's over. But I haven't been to it in 40 years.
I actually have a very positive association with it.
I used to go to the Little Five back in 92 to 95.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely turns the town upside down. And, you know, I hope people are safe and have a good time. But, and, you know, I was here when they made Breaking Away, so I have that.
I'm more in the zone of not enjoying the party, but facilitating the party. And that's what the restaurant industry is about anyway, about facilitating a good time. So as long as everybody's having fun and being safe and we get to facilitate that, then it's a joy for us to keep working it, yeah.
But, you know, Breaking Away was a good movie, right?
I don't know what to even expect because I feel like it's a lot of hype for the event, honestly.
Yeah, agreed.
No idea what I'm getting myself into by attending a Little Five event.
I love Little Five. I've never been to Little Five, but I love it. Because it's people getting together, doing stuff together without fighting. You know, it's a competition, but nobody really gets mad if you lose, so.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Chuhan G, Andrew McKieran, and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Jenna Janikowski. And engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music is provided by the trio of Dan Leff, Ben Lumsdane, and Scott Spatke. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next here on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.